Boy, there's something about stories of heroism that just capture our attention. And for the next couple weeks, we are going to look at different stories of people who ran and did amazing things, and also the role faith plays and God plays in heroism in our life, that when we face whatever challenges come in our life, will we be prepared? Will we have the resources we need to take on whatever challenges are before us? Can we rebuild after tragedy has struck in our life? You see, Chicago, and I went to college in Chicago for 4 years and lived in Illinois. It's a pretty amazing city, but it had grown so quickly from a small town of 300 fur traders to suddenly 300,000. Because of the way the railroads were hooked up there, all the resources came into Chicago, and it grew fast with a lot of wood. Almost all the houses built within 4 feet of each other. Tar roof. Not only that, but besides being made out of wood, the sidewalks were all made out of wood. All the boats on the rivers were carrying wood. There was wood everywhere. Those on the east side of Chicago River thought they'd be safe because the river would protect them. But when the river jumped across onto the boats, onto the wood that was being stored on the boats on the other side, they knew they were in trouble. They called the governor, the mayor rather, and he came to the courthouse, and as he arrived, he realized they were in trouble. They took the big bell and began to clang, emergency, everyone run, we got big problems coming our way. As that bell began to ring in a courthouse that was supposed to be fireproof, all of a sudden, many had forgotten that the prisoners are kept at the courthouse. People began to cry from the basement, let us out of here, let us out of here. They ran and let many murderers and even and thieves escape. They thought that you'd maybe protect them, but they disappeared into the crowd. It was utter chaos. And even this fireproof building, the courthouse, suddenly the rafters holding that bell burned, and that bell came crashing down, an omen of what was to come. And you know, if you talked about maybe Springfield, or you talked about Indianapolis, and you said, hey, here's a town that burned down, I might understand it, but how does a city sitting next to Lake Michigan burn? Like, of all the places that wouldn't have access to the resources to deal with the problem, how could that city in my state growing up, how could this be one that is so close to the resource it needs, and yet so far away? What if the same thing is true for us? Whatever fires we face, whatever challenges that come our way, what if we have access or are nearby a resource? See, isn't it true that an unquenchable fire can be overcome? But if it's going to be overcome, it's got to be overcome by an inexhaustible source of water. See, life has this tendency to be unquenchable in the fires that throws your way. And yet, what if you had access to a strength, a powerhouse, something, an inexhaustible source of strength and wisdom and heroism to take on whatever life throws at you? That's what we're going to look at today as we say the Chicago fire and another fire from the time of Babylon mentioned in the Bible. Now, you can't talk about the Chicago fire without mentioning Mrs. O'Leary. And if you do any study, you'll find that Mrs. O'Leary, one, it was complete propaganda against her. They often put her picture in the newspaper looking like a 900-year-old witch when she was a 40-year-old businesswoman, a Catholic woman who'd built a very successful business with 6 or 7 cows, and she delivered milk all around Chicago. You'd never milk a cow at 9 p.m. They sent several investigators who cleared her time and time again, but they just kept saying it was Mrs. O'Leary and she got the blame for it all. She said she didn't even sleep that night because her neighbors had friends in town from Ireland and they were playing the fiddle all night. Some even think maybe they were out in the barn playing cards, but honestly, no one will ever know. But the fire did break out somewhere in that neighborhood, and it could even have been in that barn, but she was cleared of all wrongdoing, but never outran the propaganda. If you remember the old song, old town and a hot town in the old town tonight. It actually has a lyric about Mrs. O'Leary, and she got blamed one more time years later when that song became popular. However, when the fire first broke out, her husband realized maybe they could save the house. He runs over to the fire hydrant, and he begins to pump out water and douse his house over and over and over again. At that point, there was still water pressure. Keep that in mind. He covers his house, even though the barn's on fire. And as the fire spread up through about a third of Chicago and began to just eat away at it on a map, the fire damage, even with all that fire jumping and burning from place to place, even after the fire, their home still survived. Because in the face of this unquenchable fire, they had been covered with an inexhaustible source of water. Something that protected that until it was rebuilt and turned into a fire academy many years later. So what do they have access to? And what spiritual lessons might there be? We want to look at three memorials that existed and still exist today from the Chicago fire and what we can learn from them. The first is the Chicago pumping station. So I grew up in Chicago in downtown, and so we went there often, even in eighth grade. Everyone goes to Chicago for a tour if you live in Illinois, and they tell you about the Chicago fire. And the tourists today are at that pumping station. Here's the water tower, the big tall one. Over to its right-hand side is the pumping station. It was still there today. It was known to be fireproof, made out of limestone. And I think we learned from the Chicago pumping station that my resilience is determined by my source of regulation. What do I mean by that? Well, Chicago had 500, maybe even 1,000 fire hydrants. While they had 300,000 people and only 185 firemen, that's not a lot, 17 pumping horses that could pump the water, all of it was dependent upon one factor. All 1,000 fire hydrants came down to one single source of regulation: the water pressure produced by this pumping station. And guess what caught on fire first? The roof. Not the walls, but the roof. Burned through the roof, burned out the pumps, and now all of the pumps through all of the city were irrelevant. Even the pumping stations that they had with horses were dependent upon the basic water pressure that was already there, and because they didn't have any water pressure, they couldn't stop the fire. How about you? No matter how vast and broad your expanse is of what you've done or built in your life, do you have an internal source of regulation? Some inner force is going to get the resources to you that you need in times of need. It's one of the unique things the Bible offers. One of the most famous fires in the Bible is during a time in history called the Time of Babylon. It's a famous man named King Nebuchadnezzar. He goes into a town, burns Jerusalem, takes away all the leaders, all kind of the cream of the crop. He takes them away and says, you're now going to follow my lead. You're going to do my way. You're going to, having lost your city, burned your city, you're now going to do what I want. And these three teenagers with weird names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they are told, you now are living in a different place in a different time. You got to give in to some other values and some other plans. This is your fire. This is your challenge. They got to bow down to this king. And somebody comes and gives a report. King Nebuchadnezzar, O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of music shall fall down and worship this golden image. He had a big image of himself put up. Everyone bows down to me. You said whoever does not fall down and worship it is going to be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. He literally makes a fiery furnace to scare people into doing his own bidding. He said, there's a couple Jews that we took from their hometown. We burned it, named Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And king, they have not paid regard to you. They're not going to bow down to it. They are so idiotic or courageous, they won't do what we've told them to do. They do not see your gods or worship the golden image. What would give a bunch of teenagers who've literally lost their hometown, lost their city, taken to a far place, far away from home, the courage to stand up against a foreign dictator and a literal fiery furnace? What kind of inner regulation, inner powerhouse, inner force of wisdom or strength or heroism must they have to endure that kind of pressure? We'll come back to the story. In downtown Chicago is a church. It's called Moody Church. I actually worked at Moody Church, and I attended Moody Bible Institute. And a guy named D.L. Moody was a very famous speaker during the time of the Chicago fire. So much so that he was having an event where he was speaking the day before the Chicago fire. 3,000 people attended and wanted to hear his message about what does it mean to be a Christian? We describe Christianity in a very unique way, that there is a God who saw us in trouble, and like a firefighter, he came down to our planet, into our place to rescue us. He ran into the fire of hatred and injustice, even got himself crucified. But in his heroicism, he was willing to put his life on the line for you and I. And that everything in this life is often so temporal. It can just be gone in a moment. Strangely, the passage of Bible he spoke on that day is from a book called Hebrews. The passage says, God is a consuming fire. How ironic. His point was, don't put too much weight into things of this life. They can be gone in an instant. Little did he know it's exactly what would happen the next day. But instead, trust a God who can give you the power and the strength. He came to this world to rescue you. And that was his message the day before. You need an inner source of regulation, an inner source of power, an inner source of heroism. And the God of the Bible offers something so unique in that he came to be that example for us. Meanwhile, there's a second building that survived the fire. If you go there today, it's St. Mark's Church, St. Michael's Church, rather. If you go to St. Michael's Church, it's a gorgeous place. And it was built prior to the Chicago fire. And when I think about this church, it reminds me of another principle when it comes to facing challenges. The battle can be won before the battle has begun. You don't wait until you're in a fire to prepare for a fire. You don't wait until you're in temptation to decide what your lines and what your principles and what your values are. No, no, no. You want to decide before the battle has been begun what your values are, how far you'll go, what you will cross, what you will do, won't you, won't do, right? The battle can be won before the battle has begun. Fires and temptations will come our life this year. Ahead of time, have you decided where your lines are, what you will cross and what you won't, where you're willing to stand, where you're willing to be heroic and courageous and won't give in no matter how much pressure gets pushed? This church builds its foundation out of brick on a rock foundation, and because of that, when the fire goes through, everything built on the brick sustains. Look at what it looks like when the fire went through. For the most part, all the external walls are in place. Right? Because they were built on a foundation. These are the things that are going to be built. We're going to put the extra money and extra time into this foundation. This is the thing that's secure. It's the internal walls. Those are the things that burned down. They built it strong, and they built it firm, and they built it out of brick. Do you have something in your life that you've built strong and firm, and you know where you stand, where you go, what you'll cross, and what you won't? See, that Nebuchadnezzar guy, not only did he steal Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, kidnapped him, really, he also kidnapped another guy named Daniel. And they both are going to face their own trials and their own fires, and they're both going to have to decide ahead of time where their line is. Daniel, famous for being thrown in a lion's den rather than a fiery furnace, he's going to decide that the battle can be won before the battle has begun. But before he's faced with temptation, before he's faced a compromise, before he's told what he can and can't do, it says, Daniel purposed in his heart, he decided ahead of time, that I'm not going to defile myself. I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to do that. If this king in another land asks me to do things that I know are not right to do or not true to my God or true to myself, I've purposed in my heart in advance I'm not going to do it. So once the temptation comes, you can turn up all the pressure you want. The battle has been won before the battle's begun. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego must have done something similar because here they are standing before the king. He says, well, get those guys over here. They pull Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I want to talk to these guys who won't bow down to my statue. I'm literally the king of the world right now. Look what happens here for Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Nebuchadnezzar, not used to people standing up to him, got in a rage and fury. He gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying to them, is this true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods who just defeated your city or worship my golden image? If you do not worship them, maybe the consequences weren't clear. Let me turn up the pressure and let you know what's really going on here. You will immediately be cast into my burning fiery furnace if you don't compromise here. And what God will deliver you from my hands? Same thing, they're teenagers. Who can Who could stand up to that pressure? What inner regulator must they have? What inner courage must they have? How do they respond? How would you respond to that speech?
Okay, I'll bow down. I'm not going to the furnace.
Look at what these teenage Jewish boys say in the face of this level of pressure. Here's what they say. Our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace.
That's pretty bold. I don't have a lot of history of that happening.
And he will deliver us from your hand, O king. But if not, even if he doesn't, let it be known to you. We decide ahead of time. We're not bound down to you. We're not serving your God. We're not bound down to that golden image which you set up. In the face of the fire? You're willing to go to the fire to hold these values? Yeah. Look at that phrase, but if not. Many of you know in history, there's a story of Dunkirk, and the British soldiers had been pushed up in France, and the Germans were just about to overtake them. There's no way of escape. No one was coming for them. They telegraphed back to England, we need help. The army wasn't coming. So all the people sent personal boats, personal crafts to go and save their boys and save their sons and save their nephews. And on their way there, if you watch the movie, powerful scene of all these boats coming to rescue the British soldiers who are literally being entrapped right there in the water being shot at. But the thing they left out of the movie was what they telegraphed back home. We need help. And they also telegraphed three words, but if not. But if not, we're still going to fight this fight. But if not, we're still going to serve our God. But if not, we're still going to stand up against Germany. Those three words they were quoting from the King James and saying, we have decided ahead of time where our line is and where courage and heroism stands. Now, Daniel's similar. Daniel's going to be face to face with a different king of Babylon. He's going to face him with the lion's den. And God's going to appear to him in an angel and give him courage. And I think what he says about heroism applies to whether you're a firefighter in Chicago or whether you're Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Babylon. An angel appears and says, oh, Daniel, man greatly loved, understand the words that I speak to you. Stand upright as you're facing these circumstances. For I have now been sent to you. Do not fear, Daniel. From the first day that you set your heart to understand, the first day you prayed, first day you're like, does God even care about me? From that first day, I want you to know that you humbled yourself before God and your words were heard, and I have come because of your words, and I want you to know you're beloved. And then here's what this angel says to Daniel when he faces the lion's den and the fires that he has. He says, my Lord, no strength remains in me, nor is there any breath left in me. Then again, the one having the likeness of a man touched him and strengthened me and said, O man greatly loved, fear not, peace be to you, be strong, yes, be strong. He needed a source of strength deeper than himself. In fact, did you know if you go to St. Michael's Church today, there's an angel statue sitting right outside, a reminder of all the Catholics who fought in all the different wars for our country. A reminder that angels can be a symbol of God's presence with us and what gives people a heroism to take on war, to go into fires, to do amazing things. Do you have access to something that will help you face whatever trials or fires or temptations come your way? There was a woman during the Chicago fire. She's actually known as the Angel of Fire. Pretty amazing woman, Anna Elizabeth Hudlin. Her husband had been enslaved and liberated, and they had decided that they were going to be a couple that didn't divide over racial issues despite the sting that their family had faced in that. She was known as the Angel of Fire because she literally went up and down the alleys during the fire looking for anyone, black or white, that needed help, literally rescuing people from the alleys and rescuing them. And they personally put five families in their very small home and kept them up during the next couple of months where everyone's house has been destroyed. The Angel of the Fire. A woman of great grace and faith in Jesus who said, I want to live in my culture and my time distinct from the anger and animosity that I've seen around me. In fact, her husband, who had been liberated through abolition, he actually worked for the Board of Trade in Chicago. And as the fire went out, he actually grabbed all the paperwork, all the ledgers for the Board of Trade, and he was able to escape them from the fire. And the Board of Trade in Chicago was saved because her husband kept the paperwork and ledgers for it. Amazing. Courage under fire. Now, what do you do if you're in Lincoln Park? My wife used to live in Lincoln Park. You're in Lincoln Park. The fire is broken out. Fire coming from the east. Fire coming from the west. Fire coming from the north and south. Where do you go to hide if the fire is coming? Like, what do you do in life? Where do you go to hide? Amazingly, many ran to Lincoln Park. And there in Lincoln Park is a grave. Eric Couch has a mausoleum there. It wasn't sealed in its day. And if in no place to escape, who would think the craziest place to hide and find refuge from fire would be in a grave? I guess you're eliminating the middleman. But not only did people run to Lincoln Park, but the smoke was so bad, the fire so bad, there were many open graves dug in Lincoln Park. And many people, amazingly, jumped down into the grave, crawled to the bottom of the grave, where the smoke would go over top and the fire would go over top and be just enough oxygen. And they survived the Chicago fire by laying in a grave. How crazy is that? And yet by analogy, the Bible says something unique. The Bible says that one of the craziest things you can do to find heroism and courage and strength is that there was a God who came like a fire into our world. He came into the fire. He allowed himself to be put into a grave. And in that grave, when you thought everything was over and there's no way of escape and you're done, the whole plan's over, yet he would come out of that grave. And because of that, if you root yourself, if you hitch your wagons to him, you're going to find a strength and power and courage to do courageous things. Because the worst thing that life could do to you is to take your life, but he promises to resurrect you from life. This inspired heroism throughout the world, that life could be found in a grave. Crazy. Which brings us to our third memorial is the Chicago Water Tower. And I used to see this all the time. I literally was like maybe a quarter mile from there. I walked by here every day in college, just about the water tower. I'm a magician and juggler, so I used to perform right over here on the streets next to the Water Tower Mall. Here's the pumping station. And this water tower, the Chicago Water Tower, was built out of limestone back in the 1800s prior to the fire. It was known to be fireproof, and it's still there today. But it reminds us that fortitude is not about avoiding fires, although I'd love to avoid fires in my life. It's about being forged in the fire. 2026 will bring you challenges. You won't be able to avoid them. But will you allow yourself to be forged in the fire? See, it's one thing to have an inner regulator, and God will offer us to be our inner regulator, like that pumping station. But we also need something to help us regulate the demands that come. And the Chicago Water Tower was the top technology of its day. It actually has a 138-foot tube going up and down in it. And that tube is designed that when the pressure, the demand really, from the different places in Chicago come, that water goes up and down to regulate the demand. So you have high demand, you got a little extra water in there. You got low demand, it can fill itself back up. Not only do we need an inner source to help us regulate, but doesn't life just have more demands than you realized? Sometimes they're easier, sometimes they're harder. But we need something inside of us to help regulate the demands that come. And God offers to be exactly that, to be with us in those demands, to show us what a life handling those demands with grace and mercy and peace looks like. That is certainly what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego found. Standing before him, they just give this big speech. The king is not used to anyone standing up before him, especially with this fiery furnace. So Nebuchadnezzar is now, he was angry. Now he's even more angry. Full of fury. He expressed his full rage towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that they heat the furnace 7 times more than usual. You got to think, this gigantic bonfire was big before. Now it's 7 times bigger. And the sarcastic side of me is like, whether I get killed at 212 degrees or 1400 degrees, does it really matter? I kind of like being singed quicker, honestly. But fear, more fear, more fear. You got to do what I want. You got to do what I say, right? That's the pressure. That's what he's bringing on. Heats it 7 times hotter. And they still don't compromise. They have some inner source of their conviction from this God of the Bible that lets them say, it doesn't matter, you can heat that 7 times, 70 times, it doesn't matter. We're not going to compromise. So he throws them in the fire. And this story, you may not believe this really happened. I think it did. It's an amazing story. Throws them into the fire. And as they're watching them, he's not hearing them scream. He's not seeing them burn. This king, Babylonian king, doesn't really believe in the God of the Bible, is looking into the fire, and he sees that they're still standing there. And he says, did we not cast three men into the fire bound? Look, I see four men, loose, not bound, walking in the midst of the fire. They're walking around in there, and they're not hurt. And that fourth one doesn't look like a human being. It looks like a son of a god or something in there. And they saw these men on whom bodies the fire had no power. The fire of their head was not singed, nor their garments affected. And he finally was like, get them out of here. They didn't even smell like smoke. Now, you might think, I don't think it really happened. That sounds too magical. You might think it's a good analogy. I think it really happened, but it's an amazing analogy. The Bible records that God came and stepped into the fire with them. In fact, in the Bible, kind of theologians have this kind of nerdy word called a theophany. It's basically just a word that means when Jesus shows up in the Old Testament. Notice the phrase Son of God. Sounds a lot like the Son of God, the phrase Jesus is called. That Jesus himself stepped into the fire with these guys to walk through the difficulties and challenges with them. And by analogy, God wants to know whatever challenges you face, no matter seven times hotter, whatever you think you couldn't face, and it got hotter than that, God says, I want you to know, I'm not only watching, I'm in the fire with you, and I want to strengthen you, and I want to protect you, and I want to walk with you in the midst of it. And whatever you face this year, whatever challenges you're going to go through, we can actually rebuild on whatever challenges you've had. I'll give you an example. The Palmer House. If you've been to the Palmer House in Chicago, it's an amazing hotel. The hotel had just been completed 13 days prior to the Chicago fire. What a bummer is that? Can you imagine? You're the builder, you're the architect. You put the whole thing together. It was actually a present for his wife, if I remember, the architect, when he built it. And it burns down 13 days later. But as it was burning, the architect ran down to the basement. There's an unfinished area. He dug deep into the dirt. He took all the architectural plans that were still nearby. He shoved them down in the dirt, covered it with sand, covered it with dirt, covered it with sand, and then he ran out of Chicago and buried in the rubble as all the fire came down. They were able to rebuild the Palmer House in record time because deep in the rubble and darkness were the plans to rebuild. What if in the middle of whatever tragedy or fire you face, God might have something hidden in there to rebuild the next phase of your life? And what if the thing you most want to get rid of could be the source of the most thing that could restart what you need the most? In fact, maybe I know a big Bengals fans. I grew up in Chicago, and so, you know, almost everybody was a Bears fan. And if you're a Bears fan, of course, you know about Soldier Field. And Soldier Field is right in Grant Park. And Grant Park is pretty amazing. It's 200-plus acres. In fact, we used to go down in college. We'd go to Buckingham Palace. I'm sorry, Fountain, not Palace. Buckingham Fountain. And there's incredible light displays. You'd hang out there. Just an incredible place. But all of this area, where Soldier Field is and where Buckingham Fountain is, did not exist during the time of the Chicago fire. That's 200 extra acres that used to be just Lake Michigan. So every time you watch the Bengals beat the Bears, they have done it on the rubble of the Chicago fire. Because all that rubble got pushed into the lake. And all that rubble got formed and fashioned and created what's called Grant Park today. And what if whatever rubble you've had in your life, last 10 years, 20 years, something got singed, it was a divorce, it was a tragedy, it was something that didn't go your way. What if instead of just being a tragic thing you look back on, you could say, I can rebuild on this, I can play on this, I can find beauty on this, I can find another source of joy to be remarried again. What if there could be a heroism that could let you face your tomorrows? And I think there's no more powerful story that I've ever heard then what comes out of the Chicago fire the next day, in the next couple months. There's a man by the name of Horatio Spafford. And Horatio was a businessman, he was a lawyer. And that day with the Chicago fire, he lost everything. But not only did he lose everything, all his friends lost everything. 100,000 people homeless. He and his wife had planned a trip to go to England with their four daughters. He decided he needed to stay there and help care for and help. He was a man of God. He was a Christian, a follower of Jesus. And he felt like he wanted to send his wife to be safe with the kids. They're going to go off to England. But he wanted to spend a few more months to get things right, figure out what he could salvage from his business, if anything, help those who were hurting, and try and be an example of God in the midst of the recovery of the fire. So there in Chicago, he puts his wife and he puts his four daughters on that boat, and they take off through the Great Michigan, the Great Lakes water system. And as they come out to the Atlantic, tragedy strikes, but he won't know it, as that boat strikes another boat. It will be weeks later until she finally arrives in England and he receives a telegraph. It's very short. I survived. Alone. Lost all four of his daughters. He then decides, I've got to get to my grieving wife. He gets on a boat. He travels through the Lake Michigan system and all the way through all the Great Lakes. As he gets close to that place in the Atlantic River, Atlantic Ocean, as he's heading over to England, he turns to the captain and says, and I heard there's a tragedy here where I lost my daughters. And he said, yeah. I said, where was that? He says, somewhere around here. He goes, could you pause and could you stop the boat? And could I just have a moment to grieve and to think and to pray and find strength? He said, yeah. So here, if the fire hadn't been bad enough, if the business hadn't been bad enough, what could be worse than this moment? And if anything shows a complete unquenchable sense of fire that the world sends us. And yet here in this moment, he pulls out a pen, he pulls out a piece of paper, and he begins to write the words to a song. It is well with my soul. A hymn that becomes famous. You may have heard it at a mass, you may have heard it at a funeral, you may have heard it at a church service, but it's a man facing one of the worst fires a human being could ever face. In the middle of that moment, he says, I need an inexhaustible source of comfort. I need an inexhaustible source of courage. I need an inexhaustible source of grace to sustain me. And I'm going to have the band come out and do that song. And maybe you've heard that song, but you never knew when it was written and what it meant for a man of incredible heroism in the middle of the Chicago fire to have this moment on his way to his grieving wife still say, I have access to a resource that can help me in the worst of times. And maybe that's the question we could end with today. Do you have a well deep enough for your soul? Do you have some place that you can get access to strength and wisdom and courage that's bigger than just trying harder or trying again or working a little bit more? Do you have some deep well that you can go to when you encounter the fires of life? Because God wants to be that source of strength and comfort and joy and heroism for each one of us.